Hey girl, hold on one second. Oh, I am so hot right now. Oy. Katie, how are you? Are you there? Ignore me. I look like a hot mess. My boobs are bouncing out of my bra, which is a nonstop problem. How are you? I was hoping you would get on tonight.
Got the little guy down in time, so
Tell me everything that's going on.
it's nothing like so. First of all, the membrane sweep thing and the whole like cervical checks. I was nodding along with him because it made sense to me, and he seems to put a little more weight on the fact that my first was a 9 pounder than I'm putting on it. But like, so he's just like, whoa, okay, well, as soon as you hit term, we can start doing those checks and membrane sweeps. And it made logical sense to me, so I was kind of like, yeah, thinking that would be okay. And then I posted asking about it in the group, not in the, well, in both groups, but anyway, on the larger Facebook one. And then a whole bunch of people were saying like, no, so much no to this. And like I wonder what Trish would have to say. And then Gina, one of the moderators, I don't know if that's what to call her, but she's like,
Yeah, Gina, she's one of my VBAC mamas.
she just said like, not, she didn't seem to agree with it either. So then I was just like, huh, I wonder, because I was kind of, I know through the course, the idea, like the fact that it's not great maybe to get too many checks because it can get you discouraged and also the risk of infection. But then I was thinking maybe, I'll let you see what you're going to say, but I was like, maybe Trish will say that's more like when you're in labor, it can be discouraging. But like,
So it really depends on. So I tell the girls in here, like, as I get to know you, even for myself, knowing the truth behind the cervical exams, that they really don't matter unless they matter. They really matter if you're being induced. When you're waiting for spontaneous labor, they really don't matter. That being said, even myself, and I'm pretty strong-willed, I can really get in my head when I'm pregnant about those checks. And I can check myself. So that's even worse, right? And knowing like this really doesn't matter when your body says it's time, your body does it and it does it so perfectly. It only matters if your provider is saying it's time and they want to kickstart you into labor. Speaking of Gina, there she is. As far as cervical exams, it really depends on you because they can get in your head both ways. They can get in your head if you hear what you feel is, oh, those are awesome numbers, and then nothing happens. And then they can get in your head if nothing, if they're not what you would deem good numbers, but it really doesn't matter. But what I find is that when we get in our head, we can stump the whole process up. I just was answering. I have to be so careful what I say on Instagram because I will get shit either way. And with you guys, I can get like real and like be like, okay, like I know Rita's personality. I know Gina's personality. Like I know what I can say to them. And like, so someone just asked me, like, why does some women's bodies not go into labor? And I want to be like, because we don't wait on our bodies. Like we're trying to get in there and we're doing all these things. And then our mindset really matters. And I don't think a lot of people realize what mindfulness and mindset. Gina, it's your mom that does something with mindfulness, right? I have learned so much since I started the VBAC lab, particularly. About mindset and how we can really affect what happens to us physically. So, how do I get into that in an Instagram story, right? But with you guys, I can definitely say that the other thing that happens is these providers use those opportunities to start laying the foundation for induction or repeat cesarean in your cases, you know, and
What's the place of membrane sweeps then in all of this? Because if he's saying like, Like, it does make logical sense to me, sort of. Like, if we can get things earlier, then why not? Like, once we're...
I am all... What is happening?
But then doesn't that mean that you, like, the cervical check...
Yeah, but what you...
Membrane sweep.
What you can say is, I don't want to know the numbers. I don't want to give me any indication. Now, if you're, like, really hardcore and it's not going to sway you, then so be it. I am a huge fan of cervical, of sweeps,
yes,
especially for my VBAC moms, not because I think your body has to have it, but I think in light of all the roadblocks,
yes, let's do
whatever we can to like get our body going, because cervical sweeps, they don't really induce labor. They induce the hormones that start labor.
Okay.
So it's like almost like ringing the doorbell or knocking on the door.
I am
a fan.
The other option is kind of like, just don't ask, just ask them not to tell me, but they still do it.
Okay. Well, yeah. And tell them, hey, just so you know, like, I'm totally in agreement with trying to get my body to do its thing, but I trust my body and I have no problem going past my due date. So if we do this, this is really, you know, just to knock on the door, get things started, but not for us to make a plan yet.
Okay.
You're
the one that we were chatting, right?
Yeah.
We were chatting on the group, right?
Yeah.
Maybe I got on a little bit later, but there were just so many issues with everything you were saying beyond like some of it was like,
I am in agreement with you, Gina, and I wanted to break down some of the things. That's why I tagged.
Yeah. Like, I think we need to go line by line.
Yeah, that's why I said
the situation.
Yeah, Katie, for you to come, because I wanted to talk about several things.
I have so many problems.
Yeah,
I should just like preface, my husband's a surgeon and I did not get my VBAC and I still have so many problems.
Yeah. Well, and I'll be honest, I've been answering so I prioritize the bat signal. The Birth Queens group has just taken a life of its own and it's not my priority. My priority is my students. So I try to get in there, but I was up this morning reading through everyone's and there was several, I'm with Gina. There were several things that I was like, okay, I'm okay with that, but what the hell is that? Mm-hmm. And so I'm worried that they're not as supportive or VBAC friendly as they need to be. I think they're sprinkling some things in there, but it really matters about you and your mindset and what do you want. Were you also the one that said they're going to charge you if you reschedule?
No.
Or was that someone else? Okay.
That was someone else. No one has scheduled me anything.
Okay. Yeah. Someone in the group, and I don't remember who now because that was early this morning, posted that they're 31 weeks and they scheduled a repeat C-section for them just in case or whatever. And that they also found out that if they reschedule the cesarean, they get charged, like reschedule or cancel, they get charged $300. And I was like, they didn't even schedule it. They just got notification that it was scheduled and they're 31 weeks. And I was like, hell to the no. That's not okay. If you scheduled it and rescheduled or canceled it, that's one thing. But when they do it for you, so I'm going to look while we're talking to see if I can find that, because that really aggravated me. But I knew there was a lot of things, Katie, that I wanted to talk to you. So why don't you like kind of get a download of what you've posted to everyone so we can all kind of talk about it.
The main things, and Trish has also kind of already talked to me about the membrane sweeps and just so that's kind of off the table, sort of. I feel good about it. The other piece is, I think of what he said was, as I was leaving, I was like, huh, interesting. I didn't feel like it was as pro VBAC as I thought, was just the wording around like, we pretty much want it to be a textbook labor. Because
what is that really?
Someone
tell me what that is. I've never seen textbook labor.
Because he said the first appointment, he said, as long as everything is going well. So then I made a point this time, because I've been going through the VBAC lab, and I made a point this time saying, so last time you said, as long as everything's going well, like, what exactly does that mean? Because I didn't know, like, baby position, like, it could mean so many different things. So then he kind of just said, like, we'd want it to be pretty much textbook. And then he just set our threshold, which this does make logical sense to me. Like the threshold for sending a VBAC mom to the OR is lower. I don't know, like, but I'm starting to get the sense that maybe, I don't know, that myself and my doula and my husband might push for a little bit more than what my OB will, is sort of what I'm wondering about.
I'm really feeling salty tonight. So I think the threshold, the risk of uterine rupture is so slightly above everyone else. Okay. Why is the threshold different? What it is that their ability to move you in that direction, that threshold is a lot lower, in my opinion. Because, I mean, not that it's not with first-time moms, because I feel like first-time moms like that aren't educated and empowered to understand some of these coercion tactics are very easily swayed into the OR for like non-emergent reasons. And so I'm not liking your provider. So I don't want to set up like a super negativity, but I don't like that, because in all reality, the same roadblocks exist for you guys as everyone else. It's the same. Like, if there's a sign of an emergency, you need to go back. If there is a sign of distress for the baby that's can't be resolved, you need to go back. Same with everyone else. Like, what is the different threshold? You know, like, I just feel like a lot of these providers aren't called onto the carpet for these things they say, because they're done in their own little world and no one challenges them, you know?
Yeah, no, that's good perspective.
It's hard. And I know it's hard for you guys. Like, it's very easy for me to say that sitting here in my office or being the one who's not in that position when they start saying things that are frightening, you know, but it just
kind of seemed like a blanket, like, oh, so it kind of seemed afterwards, like, oh, that was a handy thing for him to say, but not be specific about, right? Like,
well, none of what he said was non-specific. Like, what the hell is a textbook labor? Really? What is it? Like,
he didn't say anything.
Yeah.
He actually didn't say anything. That's the problem. He didn't, like,
I wanted specifics about, like, what do you, like, how do you mean?
Yeah, like, can you clarify, what do you specifically mean there? What is textbook to you? How many, like, are you, is it a certain number of hours my water breaks? Is it a certain number of hours of pushing? Like, and then when you start asking those questions, he's going to have an oh shit moment and be like, she's not going to, like, listen to my, not.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe I can ask more of those specifics next time. And I mean, he's the one, like, after my son, he's the one during my debrief, because he was the one who did my C-section. I didn't know him before he came into the room when I was in labor. He brought it up on the phone, like, it was COVID, so we were on the phone, but about a VBAC, like, me being a good candidate for it if I ever wanted it in the future. Like, he brought up the subject. And should I ever want that should be possible, I guess, as the surgeon who did it. So that was part of the reason. And I also just really I really like him. He's, I don't know, like, calm, and there were other things. So I was just like, okay, we'll go with him.
But I would warn you that his demeanor may change if he feels he's being challenged. Because here's what I can tell from years of working with a lot of these OBs. It's only been recent that women have started questioning them.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And they're very used to everyone being like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Even if it's like, oh, so we should go ahead and talk about your induction. Okay. You know, like, I don't really let my patients do. Okay. There's no like, well, why? Or can you print that? Like, I have never had a patient at bedside ask a provider to go and bring them studies or proof of what they're saying. So it really allows them to say whatever the hell they want at times. And there are times, you guys, that I am like literally biting my tongue because at bedside, I can't challenge them, you know, like that I can't do. I can only do it if you do, then I can advocate for you. But I can't just go, what? What is that? That's not true. Like, you know, like I can't do that. I cannot tell you how many times I try to educate the snot out of my patients so that when those things are said, they're like, oh, well, you know, like I can't tell you how many times I have taken a patient back to the OR for like fetal intolerance of labor. We're not talking about big dips, like big, you know, decelerations, just a sleep cycle. The baby is sleeping and they pull out the strip and they're like, see how the heart rate's going? It should be like this, whatever. And now it's just like this, this baby's getting tired. Like we can go ahead and we can wait if you want, but then we might be in a situation that is emergent and baby's not doing so well. I can't even tell you how many times I've seen that. And it's like, the baby's asleep, you asshole. Like I can't like, so I try, as soon as I admit my patients, I teach them, which is why I have it in the coach class, teaching your partner how to kind of look at the fetal monitor, because they use that a lot because you guys don't know what the heck you're looking at. And if we tell you it is something, you're going to be like, oh, it is that, you know? So, you know, they're not like completely flat out lying, but they're definitely twisting it to their advantage, you know? So anyway, it's very maddening, but I feel like we are in a good spot in some ways because they're getting called to the mat and they're realizing there's accounts like mine. There's other accounts that are out there that are educating women, and women are asking good questions. That is like, I mean, I really honestly could count on one hand how many times I've had a patient stop a provider and really ask for good clarifying answers. You know, they just, most women come in and they're like, he's my doctor or she's my doctor and she's going to do what's best. And I just need to do what she says. And that's not always the case. So your doctor very well, I mean, first of all, if he had flat out said, you're absolutely not a good candidate and you should not have a VBAC, do you think you would come back to him? You would have, you know what I mean? So some of what they do, just like in the beginning, when, you know, you're early pregnancy and you say things like, I really want to talk about like labor and like your preferences on pushing. And they're like, oh, we've got plenty of time. We can talk about that later. That's a bad sign. Mm-hmm. They're putting you off, you know?
I did ask him about the epidural, because I know it could be different at different hospitals. I did ask him because we'd both spoken, acknowledged that part of the issue last time was lack of movement, or it could have helped. My son was OP, and I did get to 10 centimeters, and I pushed for 3 hours and all of that. But then it had been 24 hours since my water broke, and so then I asked him this time about movement, and he just said like walking isn't safe, but you can be
walking isn't safe
when you're on your epidural, on an epidural.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah. I was like, wait, what?
so
I'm like, I don't like this guy at all.
No, he did say like the turning and the hands and knees and all that stuff.
So let me just clarify this, because I'm a little concerned.
Okay.
Do you want an epidural, or is he saying you have to have one? Oh, you no, do want one. Okay. Because a lot of providers who aren't very VBAC friendly will tell you you have to have one.
So he didn't so much tell me that, but I did realize that he said something about it before I did. So I know he would rather it be in, but that's not the reason why I'm doing it. So if that makes any sense. Yeah. My first epidural. Yeah.
It's about what you want. That's all I care about.
No. Yeah. It is what I want. But I just want to be able to, I'm really hoping this time that I can get it later on, that I can stay at home longer. A lot of it feels like it rests on the position of my baby. Cause last time I didn't get any, like, I'm the one who learned that you're supposed to get little breaks between contractions. It was just horrible pain from the start of my water breaking. Yeah. Which was the start of labor. And then
my how many weeks are you? You're 31. Okay.
I'm 31. Yeah. My epidural and the first one failed. And so this 12 hours later when they got one to actually work, I was so done and my body was so shut down that I think he just wasn't going to descend.
So let me talk about OP babies.
Yeah.
A lot of times with a first time mom who has an OP baby, sometimes if you're like really in shape and working out, sometimes all those muscles can be so tight that they have a hard time coming down and moving in and getting in the right position. Other times with a first time mom, especially if you're induced or if you get your epidural too soon in the labor process, sometimes it may not even be straight OP. They could just be wonky. It's just, it can be off just a tiny bit, but the real, unless you have a physical, like, you know, you've got like some kind of weird misshapen pelvis or something, 9 times out of 10, babies are going to get into the right position. I've had one OP. It happens. A lot of times it can happen just depending on, you know, what's going on with you, if you're being induced. I was induced with her. And I really think that's the main reason is we forced her into labor basically before she really got into the place. You know, them getting into that place is 9 times out of 10 what starts labor, because the pressure of their head on your cervix. So there's a lot of different factors, I think, that we see a lot of increased OP babies in the hospital setting. A lot of it has to do with us and what we're doing.
Well, I wasn't moving at all. Like I was on my back. Like
That's the other factor. If you go into labor before the baby's really engaged, however they are, when that labor kicks in, they're going to get engaged. So if they're in a wonky position, that's that. They're getting squeezed down in there. You know, when we wait for the spontaneous, normally, now, it's not always the case. There's always that weird position, weird thing. But what I would say, since like there is a little bit of apprehension and fear of having another O baby, which, girl, I get it. My number 5 was an OP baby and she hasn't let up on me yet. That I've told you guys the baby that I told, if some of you guys have heard me tell you the story, that because I was unmedicated, if she hadn't been my 5th, I would have ended up in the OR. I was begging to go to the OR. I was so over the pain and the lack of relief that I was contemplating cutting her out. Like I remember really thinking, because I was already a nurse, I was thinking, I knew where they kept instruments in the room. And I was really thinking, how can I get from here to there? And I will cut her out. At this point, I can die. I don't care. She can go on. I don't care. I want her out. So I understand like the fear of OP for 4 years after that. And still sometimes if I have an unmedicated OP mama, my knees get weak because it is intense. But I've learned so much since then on positioning. So if I were to redo my pregnancy after my OP baby, I would see a chiropractor. If I could, I would see a physical therapist. I would do a lot of swimming. I would do forward lean inversions. I am very type A. So I would do what I could control. And then I would just learn to do some, you know, the relaxation breathing, getting into deep squats, getting on the ball, doing all the things to open up that, you know, the inlet so the baby can come down, because your baby doesn't want to be in that position either. So when you're doing, you know, you really don't have to do all those things. That's just me personally. I like to have things I can do to control. But the most important thing you can do goes back to that head again, like believing in your body. Your body didn't fail you. The process failed you. Mm-hmm. 100%. And what we do to you fails you. I tell you guys all the time, the worst intervention we do and the number one first one we're going to do is get you in that bed and lay you down. It's the worst thing we can do. I always offer to my patients, do you want to stand by the bed while I do your admission? And then if I need to sit her down to do her IV or whatever, but you can sit on the ball. I've had students that never even got into the bed until after delivery. So the worst thing we can do to you guys is stop moving you. All of it works by rhythm. your body opening, the baby moving, the contraction moving the baby down. When we put a wrench in that, we cause issues. So I would say chiropractic care.
I already have it scheduled. Yeah.
Good. Good. And then the other thing I would do is really work on your mindset to just constantly remind yourself that your body knows what it's doing, and your body's going to do the right thing. The baby's going to do the right thing. And I heard you say, if I can stay home, girl, yes, you can. You have to make a decision.
I don't know. Like that, it was horrible. Like the midwives were like, you are not ready to go to the hospital yet. You're not dilated enough.
Water, are you in Canada?
Yeah, I wanted to go. Like, I begged for the epidural from the start with that OP baby. Like, it was so awful.
So do you hear me? I've had 6 unmedicated deliveries. The only baby that I contemplated any kind of help was my OP baby. I've had 6. Only one have been OP. The chances of me having an OP baby is way higher than you, because my uterus is all sorts of worn out, you know, and I've only had one. So I really, really doubt that your baby will be OP. I doubt it. So I think you're in a fantastic position to be able to stay at home as long as possible. I wish we had the same type of care that you guys have in Canada. You know, I learned that by default, because I had Taylor on the podcast after I hired her, and we were like, I was literally blown away about some of the options you guys have. So even if you didn't have that, I still feel like between Taylor and I, we could help you stay at home longer, but to have that, even better.
Yeah. And we'll have the doula with us too this time.
Yeah. So
Thank you. I don't want to take up too much time with.
No, it happens sometimes. We're all right with that.
But no, that's
everybody. That's everybody biggest, learns.
Yeah. My biggest fear is just that, like, I'm going to not be able to handle it, and I'll go in early and then things will just fall.
But, listen, this baby, this labor, if you can labor with an OP baby, you can freaking rule the world. I promise. This will be a breeze.
I'll put myself on mute, but before I do, it's so validating. Like, ever since learning that in the Fearless Birth, like, that most people do have little breaks and you can do anything for 10 to 30 seconds, I was like, I just find it so validating. I didn't realize how awful I had it. So I'm so much more hopeful. Yeah. Because I thought it would just
I'm telling you, my knees go weak because I can usually spot an OP baby from a mile away, even just by the shape of mom's belly. And my knees are like, oh God, I'd break out all the things to try to get that baby turned. And there are things we can do before labor gets intense to help that. And hopefully your midwives will, you know some of those things as well. And your doula.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Hey, Mia, how are you? Hi, I'm doing well. How are you guys? Good. Tell us about your week.
So I actually went to the doctor today. The number of ultrasounds they have here is crazy, but I had my third trimester scan, and baby is perfect in all the ways, sitting right about the 30th percentile for like growth and weight and all those things. So that was really good and encouraging. And then I went to my doctor, and I'm at 30 weeks. So I'm at the point where I'm starting to have like more and more conversations about what is this birth going to look like? Because I learned early on that I'm in the Dominican Republic, and there is no questioning the doctors here. There's no, what the doctor says goes, like, that's that.
Yeah.
So early on in my pregnancy, I asked not to have an ultrasound every appointment, and it did not go well. But today I was asking, I wanted to know like kind of about induction and, how long they would let me go to try for spontaneous labor. And he said, oh, 40 weeks, like your due date's the 16th. We're going to try to get you as close to the 16th as possible, for you to be able to have spontaneous labor before we think about an induction, knowing that I'm really hoping for a VBAC. So that was really, good and encouraging, because doctors here also like to just cut babies out at 37 weeks for just no reason other than convenience. I think this is the highest or second highest C-section rate country. It's well over 60%.
Brazil is the highest.
Yeah. it's up there with Brazil, but it's well over 60% of births are C-sections. I mean, the reasons moms have told me that their doctors told them they needed C-sections, like I work at a school and I ask all the ladies, like, what, did you have your baby naturally? No, C-section. Did you choose that? No, the doctor said this. I'm just,
yeah, it's awful.
So, but there's zero, the doctor knows everything. There's zero questioning. Like, and so with my first baby, I was here in town and my doctor loved that I was educated. Like we would have really good conversations back and forth through a translator. And now I'm going to a fancier, more American style place in the capital. And one of the doctors there just like almost got up in my face. It was not good. Just saying, I don't know what you think they do in the States, but they look at your baby at every appointment. And I was like, no, they don't.
No, they don't.
They don't. But I've been seeing one doctor at this practice that I have super connected with and really love and appreciate. So just hoping that the other one's not on call, I guess.
Yeah. I think the best case will be the same for you as anyone here facing, you know, a VBAC intolerant doctor is just staying at home as long as possible.
Yeah. So my plan is I've saved like 5 or 6 Airbnbs that will let me book the day of. Mm-hmm. And so because I have a toddler and so I'll be able to get her situated and then we're going to go labor 10 minutes away from the hospital because I'm an hour and a half away. So that's my plan.
Well, it sounds like a good one. And yeah, just staying at home as long as possible to where there's like really no question, you know?
Yeah.
Man, that stinks. It's so hard when there's even weirder roadblocks in the way, you know?
And like the doctor is my advocate. Like there's just no critical thinking from the nurses. Like it's just, they do what they're told and yeah. So
yeah, it'll it sounds like they're like 40 years behind us. Cause yeah. That's how we use
this. This practice is a lot better than other places, but yeah, it's crazy.
Well, we're here for you, girl, as much as we can be.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
Hey, Emily, I was loving watching that baby with the little hand. So sweet.
I had just gotten her into her bed and ran down here to get my computer. And then I hear her upstairs like,
wah, like wah. A little cat. Yeah.
It's like, well, I guess she wants more milk. So here we are.
Who could blame her? I was laughing, watching her like patting your chest and stuff. I can't even believe it. She's getting so big. Oh my gosh.
She is. She always holds on to my shirt. It's very sweet. Like she's always got her hand hooked on somehow.
That's how Grayson was, or my necklace. He would hold my necklace a lot too.
Yeah. She, because I'm like, you're going to break it. You're going to break it.
Yeah. He would do the same thing. He would get a death grip. It's like pulling off a freaking like little clamp. Well, how are you feeling?
Good. Just tired because my son is sick from preschool and my husband worked the weekend, which means he works nights, Friday, Saturday, Sunday for 12 hours. So my son was like coming in my room every single night and then he's coming in and he's coughing. So it wakes her up. I'm like, this is
joy.
But last night he came in my bed and I rarely let him sleep with me. He came in and I'm like, come on in, just don't cough too loud. I'm not getting out of bed. And he actually slept the rest of the night.
Yeah.
I'm hoping he's getting better.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to San Diego tomorrow. I belong to this like group of like online, you know, business owners, what have you. It's like a mastermind group. And I'm so like, first of all, I'm stressed out about going, but I'm taking the 2 kids with me and Grayson's like, oh, I get to sleep with you, mom. And I haven't slept with him in so long. And I know I'm not going to get any sleep at all, but I can't break his little heart. He's so excited.
Oh,
He used to sleep with me all the time before Steve and I got married. Obviously I had to like, I bribed him with a, oh my gosh, what are those things called? The planes with the camera things. What are they called? That fly over into a drone. I got a drone to get him to sleep in his own bed. That's how desperate I was. But yeah. Anyway, so we're leaving tomorrow to go do that. It's going to be very fun.
I've got one thing to say. I'm going to just make it quick because I don't want to take a lot of time. This is something else that now is driving me crazy. So my first C-section, I had a nice little incision. Normal. Like when it got better, it was like, you barely could see it. And like, it didn't affect the way my stomach is. And I had always like seen stuff about, oh, the C-section ledge. And I'm like, oh, I don't have that. So it must be. And everybody commented like, oh, your incision is so nice. And I'm like, oh, well, thank you. Like, so now I'm like, why is this incision way bigger? Like, it's just a daily reminder of this, the asshole that did my surgery. It's literally like almost twice the size that it was.
Like so the length.
It literally goes all the way across my waistline. And that's, I'm like,
different.
Is it normal? So I said to the doctor when I had my 6-week checkup, I said, is there like a standard size incision or is it just what do people do, whatever? And I'm like, do you try to use the former incision? I'm just curious. And he was like, well, the standard is 4 inches.
Yeah. That normally it's about that big.
Yeah. I'm like, well, that's what I had before. So then I'm like, this is at least 6 minimum.
Yeah.
And now, I'm not that trying to be that superficial that the physical appearance bothers me that much. I'm not walking around in a bikini very often anyway. So, but it's just the fact that now every day I look at this thing and it makes me even more mad because I'm like, probably because the guy's hands are so big, which, you know, his fat ass fingers that couldn't fit into my.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
So the doctor tried to kind of say that. He said, well, you know, sometimes it's like if the doctor's hands are bigger or if the baby's more broad across. And I'm like, this is because of this damn surgeon's hands.
Badass hands.
Because he's like, well, you know, your baby was bigger. I'm like, yeah, but she's not broad. Her shoulders are not broad across. She's long. She's not, her head wasn't that big. Her head was like normal size. So it's just like,
well, it sounds, I mean, I think your provider does whatever makes his life easier. Rachel said the same thing. My doctor had big hands and I have a 6 to 7 inch scar. Yeah.
Now I get it. Like if I wear anything that I wear, like my leggings or whatever that are comfortable, as soon as it like pushes in your stomach, it makes the part right below it kind of bulge out. And then the incision is more in. So yeah, I have this little like pouch looking thing. It's just like any pair of pants that I wear, you can see it. Not that anybody else is looking as close as I am. Like my husband's always I don't even see it. I'm like, yeah, but look, like if you look even in my jeans, you can see it.
I would definitely recommend using silicone tape.
I've had that on almost for like a week straight. I just took it off and thought, well, I better give it a day or two in between it.
Yeah. You can keep it on all the time as much as you want. Once it's healed, it will help with some of that. The other thing too, to take in consideration is that after our first baby, even if it's vaginal, because it's your first baby, like your stomach and your muscles and stuff go back better anyhow. And then the more babies you have, the less, I mean, I've had a mommy makeover, so I'm very lucky, and then had a pregnancy, which is why I can understand scar tissue and that the scar from my tummy tuck with Grayson. I thought I was going to die. It hurts so bad. That's why I really recommend that you guys do scar mobilization. Because that
scar tissue can be very intense when you're in labor, very intense if you don't work it out before labor. But you know, you do have to keep that in fact. I mean, the length of your scar is one thing, but you do have to keep in mind that you've had another baby, and the more babies we have, the less our bodies bounce back as fantastically as they do after the first baby. So taking that, but I would consider just having them look at it and see like what's going on. Did that probably wasn't happening at 6 weeks, I'm imagining.
Well, I think I was just like, still bigger in general. So it was less,
yeah.
And I kind of was just like, oh, that probably will just go away.
Only 12 weeks postpartum too. So I'm hesitant to think of anything being permanent at this point, because you're still healing, you know, not to minimize it, because I definitely hear you. And
I'm just thinking of all these things that I've always seen, like, oh, you know, I hate my C-section ledge. And I'm like, what is that? Well, now, so that's why I'm like, I feel like it's not going to go away. It's just pisses me off. It's just like,
yeah, another, it just adds more to the insult.
If it had been somebody else with regular size hands, would it have been twice? Rachel, I feel so validated by your comments here.
What's she saying? I'm looking. I was just going to ask if anybody else has this going on that they can kind of vent with her.
She said, or my underwear will roll down into it. Yes. Which is especially irritating when like the numb, weird feeling. Like Kindred Bravely's C-section underwear have lace along the top. They're high rise, but have lace along the top. Even the feeling of like lace against that weird nerve. I'm like, why would they put lace on there? That doesn't feel so weird having that.
Probably
against
you. Because whoever invented them didn't have a scar there. I still have weird numbness, and it's like a feeling you can't describe, but it's very, it's like fingers on a chalk, like nails on a chalkboard feeling.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just,
I'm actually like feeling mine right now as you're saying that, but yeah.
Oh yeah. Yep. I'm like those, I'm not wearing those. That's doesn't feel comfortable against this numb nerve damaged or whatever tissue.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, that's my.
For the numbness too, again, that scar mobilization might be able to help return some of it.
Yeah. I've been doing that. Cause I went back to your thing and I was like, I knew there was stuff about the scar. Yeah. And I do feel like that actually has helped, or else it could just be time, but.
Yeah. And again, just keeping in mind that you're only 12 weeks out. That's not that far out, even from an abdominal surgery. Like after I had my tummy tuck, I was still having to wear compression freaking crap and a binder to work, because I like couldn't even hole punch because it was still healing. Yeah. Oh. So it takes like an abdominal surgery is serious. And you guys have like it's a major abdominal surgery. You know, so, and for me, it was all stapled back, like the muscles and stuff, because obviously I'm doing that, but yours is having to heal on its own. So just keeping in mind, like just giving your body time to heal, you know?
Yeah.
Gina, you have a C-section ledge?
So I'm not going to be very encouraging in this situation, because I had the ugliest scar ever with my first. I hated it. It was like, I had like a little bit on like one side that would like hang over. The other side was normal. And like, same thing, like after a traumatic experience, you're like, I have to look at this thing for the rest of my life. Like, really? Then they did the second C-section, they actually corrected it. So I'm not really in this moment. I'm sorry, Ellie, but yeah, now like, new scar, they cut out the old one. And then I think because my labor was so much easier the second time, like I healed a lot better, and now it's like very pretty. And also the second experience was a lot more like validating and healing, so like that scar doesn't bother me the way the first one bothered me. But I can sympathize on the like horrible experience and also ugly thing that resulted after that, like, you have to look at. And I don't think I looked at, like, my first, I didn't, you know, people like take those really cute pic, not cute, but like those like mom powerful photos themselves and like the postpartum underwear, or whatever. And they're like, look what my body did. Yes. I don't have a single picture either time because I was like so upset about the C-sections. I didn't even like look in mirrors for weeks. So I get you on that. But mine actually ended up getting corrected the second time. So.
Yeah. And I mean that, if you have another baby, if we head in that direction, there's always that as well. If C-section is the option, you know? So, or you can have a mommy makeover.
But also like when I got pregnant, and if you do have a third, when I got pregnant the second time, I found that that's when my scar, I don't know if it was all the stretching and stuff going on, but like my, everything looked better actually while I was pregnant. Does that make sense, Trish? I remember that happening. I was being like, oh, this scar is not so ugly anymore.
And yeah, probably was stretching out those lopsided sides and those little extra tissue. Yeah. Oh, the joys of motherhood.
So I'll motherhood. Keep you guys updated in a few weeks. I'll give you a progress notes. Progress okay. update.
Got it. How are you doing, Gina? 11 months. What in the heavens? Oh my gosh.
Were you working on his first birthday party?
I can't.
2 weeks. I was chatting with Miriam because her third was just born a couple months ago, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't believe like almost two, are we in October? We're in October. 2 years ago we met.
I know. I know. She sent me a picture recently and was like, you're the second VBAC lab baby.
Yeah, it's like wild. Yeah, so no, I'm good. Getting ready to celebrate a first birthday, sort of like thinking about where I was on a ball this time last year, like everything just kind of like the first contractions were on Halloween and like we're getting into Halloween again. It's just wild, you know. And then just kind of like deciding what our next step may or may not be, if we're done, if we're not done, what I would do. Have you actually want to ask you, have you ever heard of patient assisted cesareans?
So
I stumbled across it and I don't know if it's like something totally insane.
I've never seen
Rita,
one.
Rita just had hers.
But Rita did something did similar. Her? Yeah. Rita, well, tell her about your
involvement. I want to hear.
Yeah.
We come off mute. I really want to hear.
No, coming off mute. She's dying over there.
I think I missed something.
What did she was saying about patient-assisted cesareans. And I said yours was sort of that.
Yeah, I got to pull out my baby. Yeah. Like they had the, like when they took the head out, or like, yeah, the doctor pulled the head out and then he placed my hands under her shoulders and I got to take her out. And yeah,
were you all gowned up? Chest.
Yeah, I was, like they had me gloved, but as soon as I had her on my chest, they took the gloves off and the gown as well, like as far as possible, right?
Where do you live? Gown,
in Bolivia. So I feel with Mia, like a lot of our rules are the same as the stuff that Mia is fighting. I was like, oh, that sounds so familiar to my situation. But
yeah, it's so shocking how it played out.
No, my doctor was like, he was really supportive, like from the beginning. He knew that he couldn't give me a VBAC, even though I was still fighting him the whole time.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is the best that I can offer you. And like, he did every single thing that I asked him. If he could make it possible, he did. Like,
and more.
Yeah.
You got a lot more. Yeah.
So well, yeah, it was amazing because I always imagined like when you have a vaginal birth, you see those mamas taking their baby from down there and putting it up on their chest, right? And I always imagined that. And now I got to kind of experience that. It was really, yeah, somehow fulfilled part of that, what I was imagining.
I think it's incredible. And that's I've never in my career seen that.
I saw it online and I was like, well, this, because like they can't even give me a number, right? As to what my chance would be, like if the Bendel's ring would come back or whatever. So it's like, I've attempted this twice now. I have pushed for more hours than like some people who have like six babies, and I have not gotten to like birth my kid the way I wanted. And so like, maybe it would just be nice to like not go through that physical stress, but like then I would struggle to like connect to a birth without laboring personally, because like to me that's part of it, right? Like this, like yeah, this journey that you like, especially with the first one, it was like I didn't feel or really understand anything, and it was like you had no baby and then you had a baby, and like how did that happen? And then the second time I actually really like have to remind myself that that was a C-section, because it so didn't feel like a C-section, you know, with like everything that went right, it just didn't. And as long as like I got, you know, all the things that we did right, it didn't feel like a C-section. But I'm just wondering, like, if they're gonna, if it's like a 30% chance, and they're not even giving me a number, they're like, well, we have no idea, we don't study this. But maybe there's a way to like I would be totally like, I'm not weird about guts, you know that, right? So like I would be fine pulling, doing that, even watching it.
Yeah,
I'd be fine. But I just would have to find a way to like really connect to that birth. I don't think I could walk in with, not in labor, and walk out with the baby. Like it would be just a total mind, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. We've got at least, I would at least put 18 months between the pregnancies, just in general, because like of the, you know, the rules and all that, and if I wanted to even try. So we have time to think about it, but like I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a definitely an amazing thing to be able to do.
I just have to find someone who would let me.
Yeah, that's the real kicker right there.
With small hands, I'm learning.
Yeah, a surgeon, will you be like, excuse me,
my hands are really small.
Please, okay, never mind, not you. Well, it is really funny because I have to get the gloves for some of these providers, but I've never even thought about the size of their incision based on their hands. Now I won't not think of that, but go figure. I have to add that into provider questionnaire. What size gloves do you wear? If it's over 8, no. Anyway. Hey, Rachel, how are you feeling? How are you doing?
I am good. I was having some weird like heart things whenever I was like holding Kira. She's 29 pounds and my chest was hurt, you know, like when you're late pregnancy and you're like, I can't get a full breath in. It kind of felt like that.
Yeah.
And then I'm a little bit of a hypochondriac, and I realized that I had been eating nitrate bacon, and I read that that can cause hypertension or something like that. I was like, oh my gosh, that's why my heart's been hurting, but I don't know. So besides that, I've been fine, no more bleeding. I have a telehealth appointment on tomorrow to talk to my, my general practitioner on base to ask for a second opinion. Oh, sorry. She won't shut up.
At first I thought that Emily's baby was crying, or Rita's. And then I was like, wait, that is a cat.
No, it's my 4-month-old kitten. She's just very loud. We call her the mouth of the South, but I'm going to ask for a second opinion off base, and hopefully he's kind of an idiot, and I've been the one to tell him like, hey, I have this, like maybe you should prescribe this, yeah, or I have this, I'm like, you should do that. So I'm hoping he does that this time.
Just play it up, girl.
I won't have, they finally booked my first appointment in Women's Health, and it's 12 weeks, 2 days. Mm. Will be the first time I see a provider.
It's crazy.
Do you know if there are OB, if there's anything in like ACOG that says that you have to have your first appointment before you're almost out of the first trimester?
No. Mm-mm. I know a lot of them won't see you until you're 10 to 12 weeks, but really? It just really depends on the providers. Yeah. I think it's pretty common. Back, you know, when I had my older kids, like you were in by 6 to 8 weeks, but we didn't have all of the, like, you know, when I had Ian and Hunter, like you had to go to a clinic to get a pregnancy test. Like you couldn't even buy one over the counter then. So things have changed, you know? So you had to go to the provider to get confirmation of pregnancy, even to get picked up by your insurance.
Yes.
So
can we get back on the tub, please?
How are you feeling? Like, are you nauseous or anything?
Oh yeah, it's lovely. And I can't handle sausage or like other scents. And so I just, yeah, I've been really relying on my essential oils and trying to just breathe through it all.
I used to, when I was early pregnant and going to work, I would put like Vicks Vapor Rub or like something peppermint under my nose and then just wear a mask. Like, gosh, it was so bad. Weird smells. There's a lot of smells in labor and delivery, just so y'all know. Yeah, but I could smell like vaginal infections like a mile away. I would be like, she needs some antibiotic, or I would smell amniotic fluid. Someone would come in to triage and they'd be like, she's here to get her check. She thinks her water broke. And I'm like, I smell urine. And then I would be like, oh yeah, her water's broken. It has a very distinct smell. And they would be like, let Trish come in to triage and take a whiff, see what we need to get going around here. But your nose, like you, I really think it's a primal thing that we used to have to survive outside. You know, like you really had to, if you think about it, nobody animals know what's poisonous, what's not. They relate, you know, they rely on their smell. And I think that that's part of why we have that increased sense of smell when we're pregnant. To protect us, you know, because like even you can like just thinking about bad, like, you know, bad like meat or something that it could potentially be dangerous. Anyway, that's my thought on that one. Well, we're glad to see you, Rachel. Hey, Sarah, how are you? I can't believe you are over halfway there.
I know, it's flying by. Feeling really good. I don't know if this is just from like my old pregnancy, you know, and so much fear of like gaining weight. So like my first pregnancy, I lost weight until the 22nd week. And so far I haven't, lost weight this pregnancy. And I'm kind of freaked out about it happening or starting.
But you also had a lot of grief. Like they gave you a lot of grief the first time. I'm sure that's playing into it. How are your providers being this time?
Well, they're amazing. So I guess I'm surprised that I still feel that way. I still feel like kind of nervous about it.
Yeah. I don't know, like maybe just almost like the labor mindset where we just, when we start to go to that negative place, like remember, like just say, okay, I'm nourishing a baby. My body is providing housing for this baby. Whatever my body needs, my body will get. And that's that, you know, like, mm-hmm. Us in general, our culture, we focus so much on those things and forgetting like you're building a human being.
Right.
Like that's, it's,
I guess I'm just worried about it like going out of control or something. I don't know. Just like,
it sounds to me like it's not gonna.
Yeah.
I don't think that's gonna happen.
And I did, because I was like, I'm pretty close to that 40 BMI cut, or not cut off, but I was afraid that they would like make it a cutoff. And so like my BMI is like 37. And so I wanted to make sure my provider wouldn't just like deny me a VBAC because of that. And they said, oh no, we have women all the time. So
yeah, all the time.
Yeah. So I would feel good with them. I guess the hospital itself, I'm not sure.
Well, hospital policy, we can always break. That's not
okay.
They can't force you into the OR, you know, unless it's an emergent situation, that's different, which you would agree to. Yeah. No.
Right.
Yeah. We can handle that for sure. Especially with your providers on board, you know, it's when you've got them both coming at you, that makes it a little more difficult, but your providers, like the hospitals are like, they might cause a fuss a little bit, but when you've got a patient refusing and a provider supporting, that's a bad mix, you know,
right,
for them, because the provider brings the patients bring the money.
Right.
You know? So, yeah.
Yeah. And I had the anatomy scan last week and that went really well. Awesome. He's measuring like 60 percentile. So I'm hoping he stays around there just because my daughter ended up being like 99th. And, yeah. And so I'm with OBs and midwives, uh-huh. but because I'm like low risk, I get to be with the midwives, but I see my OB every so often. And she was like, well, everything looks great. And I probably won't see you again. And I started crying because I just like her so much. She's just like,
well, yeah, but that's so validating though. That's so validating. That's amazing. Yeah. Well, I'm so excited. I can't believe you're 22 weeks. Like, oh my gosh, it's gone by so fast.
I know. And I'm just so grateful to feel good. And, you know, I'm doing yoga 3 times a week and walking. And,
oh, awesome.
Yeah. So I feel, and I just started like prenatal massage. So yeah.
That's amazing.
I don't know. It's just, it's been so much better than the first time already. I'm excited for laboring. Only part I'm nervous about is the pushing, and pushing like when I hit 2 hours.
Yeah. That's... Well, girl, we'll help you with that one.
Yeah.
You've got it. The pushing parts, like if you're really utilizing movement and body positions and like have, you know, these things, the pushing is only scary when you enter into it with no knowledge. And like, right. I can't tell you how many times I'm like, okay, you're complete. It's time to start pushing. And I'm like, so did you practice any positions? Like, what did you learn? They're like, I watched a YouTube video. And I'm like, so I'm like getting into all these weird positions, showing them how to grab their legs and do this. And like, I just, it's the worst time in the world. Like, you can't retain all that. So if you go right. into it, like the pushing part is that's the part when you're going to feel the most like in control. Like you really, that's the most, that the rest is just you working like with your body and waiting on it. The pushing part is you, like it's the part that you get to really implement what you've learned. So.
I know that's just where I got hung up last time, like seeing yeah. her head and pushing for 3 hours. And I'm just so afraid to get to that point again.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be different this time.
And I do have a doula set.
And her little hip paved the path.
So yeah. Yeah, we at least saw she part did of a her job. Head.
Yeah, she did a little job. All
I
right.
Well, he's a little smaller.
Even if he's not, that's okay. You've got this. I promise.
Okay. Thank you.
Just write out those affirmations and reminding yourself how powerful you are. And you're going into this experience completely different.
Yeah.
And birth is 90% mental. I promise you guys. I promise you guys. What we tell ourselves matters so much, so much. And you're doing all the right things. So, well, I'm happy to see you. Thanks for sharing.
Thanks.
Hey, Rita. Look at that sweet baby sleeping.
Hey.
Hi. How are you feeling?
I would say very good for it being 11 days. Yeah, it's been a lot better this time, I feel like.
That's so good. How's the baby doing?
Oh, she's amazing. She does this about 3/4 of the time. So she's a calm one.
That's always nice.
Yeah, she's already on her nighttime sleep. Like, and she usually just wakes up for feeding and then goes back to sleep. So a solid 12 hour, basically.
Should I mute Rita right now so that none of you guys have to tell that?
Sorry.
So nice. Each baby is so different from the other. It's crazy.
Yeah. I was so scared I was going to have like a cry baby this time. Like my babies are usually fairly easy. I'm like, this time I can't be so lucky that this one is a calm one as well. But so far, I'm just going to hope it stays that way. but things have been pretty good.
Awesome. How's the breastfeeding going? Good?
There was a lot of pain in the beginning, but my doula helped me with the latching part.
Oh, good.
I knew the theory, but just doing it all over again, you know, you've got to practice.
And yeah, the C-section doesn't help with positioning, you know, like it's horrible positioning the first couple of days. And then she had like, she was, well, I told kind of last time when she came out, she latched on like pretty much right away and stayed on like the first solid 6 hours, basically. She wouldn't let go. So she had me right away like sore.
And 6 hours is a long feed.
I know. And she would just like switch sides and she would just keep going, you know, like we had to take her off when they wheeled me to my room and like kind of in between, but she would be right back on, you know, she would just wasn't happy anywhere else. So
yeah,
my doula's like, she's never seen that any, like with any other baby, but yeah.
Well, we're happy to see you. I'm glad you came back.
Yeah.
I love come and hang out.
There's a lot of stuff like that still going through my mind, like my head. I'm really happy the way things turned out. Like, yeah, just that I got to have like this mother assisted birth and all of that. But I'm like torn in between. This always happens to me at the end of pregnancy or like the first couple of weeks. I kind of grieve end of pregnancy. I don't know if that is a weird thing.
I do the same thing. Yeah.
And then I feel like I don't want to go on with life. Like I want this to last and I want to hold on to every single experience. And it just goes like I replay the whole thing in my mind over and over again. And I'm like, I've never heard of anyone else going through this, you know.
I think we all go through it to some degree.
Yeah, like I feel like the people that were there, my provider, like my doula, I hold on to them for dear life. I don't know why, as if I don't know. It probably sounds stupid.
They were part of a very significant moment in your life. Like, I think sometimes we forget that this is like an unbelievable significant moment. A person has been born and like, it's a really monumental moment in life, you know, like it's the one moment that this particular person is born. And I think that that all sounds like completely normal and like, yeah, treasure. I think we do it with significant events. Like it's almost like when you're planning your wedding, you're planning like a big event. And then afterwards you have this letdown of like, missing those things. And I think it's a lesson for us to slow down and enjoy the moments that we're in. Like each moment is so important, you know, and like enjoying those last kicks and those last movements and all of those things, you know, it's kind of like, I'm probably going to make you all cry. I'll probably make myself cry, but you never know until later the last breastfeed. That last feed of your baby, like you don't know till it's over. And then you realize you might've been bitching and complaining and like rushing to get to go do something like dishes or laundry or run an errand or whatever. And then suddenly you realize like, that was the last time that I'm going to feed that particular person, that last moment. I'm going to make myself cry right now, you know? And then like, I think it's a lesson for all of us to enjoy those things, you know, because I mean, I'm on the other side of parenting now. Like, I mean, I have a 7-year-old, but the majority of my children are, you know, are adults. And like, you still look at them. Like I still look at my oldest son and see that little person, you know, like it. And I wish so badly I could go back. And there's like, I'll never forget. I saw this woman on a talk show or something. And she was talking about that outside smell. For those of you guys who have toddlers, specifically toddler boys, when they go outside for like 2 seconds and they come in and they smell bad, you know, they have that weird outside smell. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you all are going to remember this moment, but they smell weird. I don't care how long they go outside. They go outside and they come in. And I remember this mom being like, she was talking about that last moment. And she was like talking about, and she put her hands up and she was like, that smell, like when your child's playing outside and they come in. And I remember being like, I will never miss that moment because it's disgusting how little boys smell. And now I would give anything for my four, you know, when my four older were little and they'd be outside playing forts and football or whatever. And they would come in and it was like gag worthy, but it was an event in life, you know, like when that time when they were together and they were all at the table and laughing and just enjoying each of those moments and learning to flip them into something that you're like, okay, this is really aggravating right now, like your little toddler coughing and waking up the newborn. But one day that'll be something you sit at your table and laugh about, you know, and talk about.
Yeah, there's another thing. How do you deal with it being the last pregnancy? That's one that I struggle really with. Like,
I had six.
Right? I know I've had five. My husband's like, we're not having another one. He's like, he told me that like 2 days ago. Like, we're not having another one. I'm like, okay, I get it. But I like just to close this off, like I always right after birth, like during my recovery, I already imagine what next pregnancy is gonna be like, or like what
I am the worst person to talk about this with.
Yeah. I knew you would understand.
I understand completely. I remember my friends being like, you're the only weirdo that can watch a 12-hour shift of a woman in unmedicated labor and want to be pregnant. I'm like, I can't help it, whatever. But yeah, I'm the worst person for that. But I will say that, like, I'm obviously at a point in my life, and like, you come to a point when you know, like, your family is complete and you're enjoying a different season of life, and you're still in the throes of raising children. So of course those things, but you'll get to a point and you'll know when your family's complete.
It just hit my husband earlier than it did me, I guess.
Well, it may not have. I thought that, and along came Grayson at 42. So yeah. Well, it's nice to see you, Rita. Hey, Ruth, how are you?
Hi, sorry. I was trying to turn on my thing, but phone was frozen.
25 weeks.
Girl. Yes. I know. I've just been trying to process how quickly this is going by, and sometimes I just start to panic, like if I'm doing the things I need to be doing in preparation for birth and all that, because life has been busy. We had to move, and then we had a trip. We just came back, so the whole of yesterday I was just in and out of sleep, and I think my body is trying to fight off a cold as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just all these things. And sometimes I just forget that I'm actually pregnant till I start to feel movements, like, oh yeah, that's true. Till you're pregnant.
There is a person in there.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, just like processing and just trying to remember, like taking all the moments. And I know when Emily was talking about like the whole shelf thing, so like because of that shelf, I currently don't look like it's weird. It's like the top is round and then it's like flat down at the bottom, and so yeah. So I'm like explaining like, oh, I'm pregnant, but yeah, I had people ask me, oh, are you sure? Like, when I say, oh, I'm pregnant, it's like, oh, really? Are you serious? Like, okay. Yeah, it's just, it's weird, but I don't know if that ever goes away, but, like, I just don't like the way it looks. Like, it's just flat. And then the top is, like, round. Yeah. Oh, it's Trish there. Oh, I think she's Oh,
how did she disappear? Yet we all stayed.
Yeah.
Oh, just yes, Ruth. I totally hear you. That's how I feel right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so annoying. But I know I also, like, my scar tissue right now, it's, like, puffy, or it's just strange. Like, it just looks weird, too. And, like, okay, well, I don't know if this will go away. And sometimes it will kind of, like, reduce, and then it swells up again. It's like, okay, I don't know.
How long ago was your C-section? What? How old's your other?
It was like 2 years ago. Yeah. So I actually have no idea how long it takes, or if it would ever, you know, like flatten out or go away, or if it's just gonna be just there, like a reminder.
Trophy
forever. My laptop died. So sorry, you guys.
Oh, okay. Well, that's okay.
I was like, what just happened? Yeah, so as you've got scar tissue down there, so massaging that and working with it is good, but as your uterus grows, it's going to pull that out. You may, if it's so tight right now, you may feel some it being a little uncomfortable. But that's something I would maybe talk to your provider. A lot of times providers don't know much about scar mobilization, unfortunately. But I think that will correct itself somewhat during, as your uterus gets bigger and the baby gets bigger, because it's going to have to take that room. But I was, I do want to address like what you were saying, like, I don't know if I'm doing all the things or whatever. So I want you guys to all remember that we can do all the things and our birth can still end up a certain way that we may not prefer, or we can do none of the things and have an uneventful vaginal delivery. The truth is, our body really doesn't need us to do all the things. It's fantastic that we do these things and it gives us a sense of control and working with our bodies. But the most important thing we can do is get out of our body's way. And a lot of times that's just reminding ourselves that our body is incredible. My body works, you know, my body will not fail me. My body does well. And then you can add in some of those things. But sometimes if we try to do everything, we get overwhelmed and then our mindset gets in the way. So I think just, you know, one of the things Taylor and I tell, like when we teach some of the third trimester classes, is picking some of the things that you want to do and then just being easy on yourself and allowing yourself to rest and to have that, those self-care moments as well, you know, because you really can't control it all. There's just some things. So pick a few things that are important to you and then let the rest go. Yeah, I need to get going too, you guys. I'm flying. I have to be at the airport at like 6 a.m. So.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm sorry about that dying, but I was so glad to spend time with you guys as always. You guys are amazing. All right. Yeah. I'll see you guys next week. Bye.
See you. Bye.